Okay, welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Excuse me, good morning if you are just joining us. Hope you are well this Monday morning. Right, a couple of things. We found a camera on the side of the road in Gortahawk. It's in a case. We have a telephone number here if you wish to reclaim it. So a phone found on the side of the road in Gortahawk. Sorry, I beg your pardon, a camera. So it's actually going to be even easier to identify. So were you out and about in Gortahawk? Did you lose a camera? It's still in its case and a good citizen has found it and wants to get it back to you. Also, there's another thing that I've lost it here. Another post I had that I wanted to mention. I'll get to that. It's about a missing dog. Stay with me because I do want to mention that as well. I know that owners of the dog are very keen to get it back. Great to see Kilmacrenan parochial houses to be demolished, thank God. The house is nothing but a grim reminder of the deeds of Eugene Green and clerical cover-ups. Perhaps the current priest would consider a memorial garden to victims of clerical abuse instead of a proposed car park. Why can't greenways use minor roads instead of digging new routes? Well, those minor roads are for local traffic, I presume. I can't imagine how they could be transferred unless you did it adjacent to it, but then you would be going into someone's land and it's the same thing. So I don't know how you could... You'd have to repurpose the minor roads and you couldn't have a situation. It would be against the whole notion of it where cars, tractors, bikes, pedestrians and buggies were all in the same space. Speaking of cycling... A cycle is going to take place on Sunday, the 7th of May from Ahiarn Centre. It's a race starting at 10 a.m. sharp, registration from 9 a.m. It's 35 miles, 56 kilometres. All monies raised will go towards local charities and refreshments will be served before and after the cycle. We have a contact number for Kieran here if you want more details on that spot prices on the day. Now... We've been contacted by a number of people. I've been contacted at the weekend or during the week. We get some calls to the station, but often it's me being contacted directly by a number of people concerned about instances in the Inishowen area. People feel they're being followed, attempted home break-ins, wolf whistling, calling, shouting, those types of things. I haven't received dozens of them, but I've received two or three of concern. So obviously... as much as I can, wanted to listen to people and try and find out what's going on and see if there's something that needs further investigation. But through our contacts, we understand that many of these instances have actually been followed up on and are not as what social media posts might claim them to be. Obviously, there's a lot of fear out there, right? And people's makes maybe judgments off or not. I'm not saying they all are, by the way. I'm only saying officially what we have here. So we contacted the Gardaí, excuse me please, and Gardaí are very, very keen to emphasise that if the public have any concerns about approaches, being followed, attempted break-ins in the Inishowen area or anywhere at all, that they should contact any Garda station and they assure us that each case will be followed up on. And they've got access to lots of things like CCTV and what have you, which would help in any investigation. So I'm not in any way trying to poo-poo people's concerns or to say it's not happening or whatever. I'm just getting you the official line from An Garda Síochána Síochána. A call of police, greenways are greenwash for land grab and wildlife barriers. They're not in favour of them, it seems. Morning, Greg. I see an increase in a number of these signs in cafes and restaurants lately. Hi, folks. Just a few lines to let you know that from next week on, some but not all of the items on the menu will be going up in price. We've tried to put this off as long as we could, and thank you for your understanding and hopefully continued support. So a lot of places will hold their prices for as long as they can. But apparently this listener is seeing more and more cafes and restaurants putting up their prices. I've noticed it myself. I'm very close to the point whereby going out for something to eat truly is a sort of a rare luxury, if you know what I mean. But of course, we do understand that there are increased input costs, electricity just being one of them. Help needed, Greg. I'm looking for your listeners' help. I'm working on a movie and need a lollipop lady outfit, ideally a jacket and a hat for next Monday, just for the day. Okay, so it's a random one, but we get those too. Anyone out there have a jacket and a hat for a film shoot in the style of a lollipop. Do lollipop ladies have, and men now, of course, you don't really say lollipop ladies anymore, but do they have specific outfits still? Is it not just like a high-vis jacket and a cap? Anyway, you know the look they're probably going for, and maybe you have it. Right, okay. Hi, Greg. Went to see my doctor 2 weeks past on Friday. He's sending me up for an x-ray at the hub. I rang the doctor yesterday. They said ring the hospital and they'd pass me to talk to someone at the hub. Got speaking to a lovely lady, said with waiting list it would be another 2 weeks. As far as I can make out, the hospital is not doing x-rays. They're sending people over to the hub. I thought the hub was for overflow and not to be taken from the hospital ones too. Thanks, Greg. That comes in from Primrose. Primrose, hopefully you get the x-ray soon. I'm not really sure of how that all works. We did do an interview on it, and it is incredibly busy there. I can't remember off the top of my head the exact way it works in terms of overflow or not, but that's your experience, Primrose, and that's the facts at this point. Greg, why is it that if you hold a medical card, you can attend the ED without attending a GP or now doc first? If you attend the ED without holding a medical card, so a private public patient, you'll be charged €100. I feel that anyone who does not hold a medical card is being discriminated against, especially if you need to attend ED because of a broken bone, which a GP would not be able to deal with. Yes, indeed. I know people who go to the GPs or now doc just to get a letter to go to the ED. It is the way it is. That is presumably one of the inpatient charges, is it, that will be done away with? I must double check that, actually. Caroline, do you know off the top of your head? Is you don't? It is? We don't know. We'll check that. Because, of course, the government's saying that they've signed now, signed into law, is it, or into legislation or whatever it might be, to get rid of most inpatient charges. So we'll double check if that €100... or it's cheaper, I think, with the letter, if that will still apply going forward. All right, 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25,000. Or, of course, you can give us a call on 074 91 25,000, 074 91 25,000. And your email's coming into us, comments@highlandradio.com. It is the 9 till noon show. We'll be back with more after I mention, by the way, a collie dog. Which went missing on the Glen Vey Road at around 10:30 a.m. yesterday morning. It's a black and white collie dog, very friendly looking thing. Actually, I'll throw a picture up here for those of you that might be watching on our stream. That's the dog that's missing there. And the owner's very keen to get it back. So it's a collie dog missing on the Glen Vey Road at around 10:30 yesterday morning. If anyone has seen the dog, please make contact with us and we'll put you in contact with the owner. So as you can imagine, owner's very, very keen to get that dog returned. It's black and white. It's got two white dots over its eyes, which might make it a little bit more distinctive, and a white tip to its tail. And its face is kind of browny looking, you know, the way dogs are. So don't go by that. But it's got two white spots above its eyes, a white tip to its tail. It went missing from that area, the Glen area, yesterday morning. And you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. We welcome into studio now Tumi Haonui, who is in a film based on her experience in direct provision. It's going to be screened at a free event in Letterkenny this evening. We'll tell you a little bit more about that after we say good morning to you, Tumi. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, and thank you, and good morning to the viewers.
Yes. Now tell me, Tumi, how long have you been in Ireland now?
I've been in Ireland for 4 years now.
Okay.
Yes.
And why did you come to Ireland?
I came to Ireland based on the political issues that I was going through in my country in South Africa. So I had to flee to Ireland, which I felt it has to be a safe place for me to come and stay.
How difficult a decision is that to leave your then home?
Well, it is very difficult to leave your own home because we have families back home, we have life that we had, and then to leave everything behind and just start afresh, it's not easy. But for the sake of myself and my kids' safety, I had to come to Ireland.
And how many of you in the family moved here?
I have 4 kids, and then they all moved to Ireland with me.
Young children, I presume?
Yes, I moved in with 2 children, and then the other one followed last year sometime, and then I gave birth in Ireland. And I have a two-year-old as well.
Congratulations. Okay.
Thank you.
And what was your experience like on arrival in Ireland?
Well, my experience arriving in Ireland was not as easy. And it was kind of difficult because I wasn't sure of what's going on. And living in direct provision, it's something that I never thought it's happening until I had to live in direct provision. And it was kind of challenging.
All right. What is direct provision then? What do you, where do you live? I know you've moved around somewhat. Yes. So shall we talk about your experience now in Letterkenny, perhaps? So what does living in direct provision mean? What facilities do you have? What are you allowed to work, or what do you get from the state, or what is your situation?
Well, as time goes by, the rules are changing bit by bit. Before direct provision, people were not allowed to work at all. And then now it changed that when on my times, we started working at around after 9 months being in Ireland, we were allowed to work. And then now they have changed it to 6 months, which is just getting better and better. And yeah, and living in direct provision is one of those things where there's different kind of things. There's different kind of direct provisions, you know. What I might have in my direct provision, other people might not have that privilege to have it.
Yes, of course. And because of the accommodation crisis.
Because of the accommodation.
Things are worsening for an awful lot of people. So in a way, maybe you were lucky in the time that you arrived that there was some accommodation.
True.
And is it of a good standard, do you believe?
Yes.
And you're happy in that regard?
Well, I am happy in that regard because at least now it's better than when I arrived in Ireland. It was a big hectic then.
Mm. Now, I've spoken to people in the past in direct provision, and they always felt under the threat of having to leave Ireland. In fact, there was he turned out to be a friend of mine down in South Donegal, and there was a big campaign to have him to allow him to stay, and eventually he was, and he's been here for ages now.
Yeah.
Do you have that fear or threat that you could be deported back to the country that you had to leave for political reasons, or are you secure now here in Ireland?
Well, at the moment, I'm secure. I have my stamp 4, which is good, and I'm secure now. But I still fear for other people because there is still a lot of deportation going on. And you know, it's going on daily basis, and it's just so scary because I know there's no one who can just leave their comfort home and come to Ireland just for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
All right. So in this film that you're in, why did you decide to take part in it? And I suppose what it is your story, but what story did you want to tell?
Well, in this film, I actually wanted to tell people about them, so that they can know what direct provision is. Because I've realized that there's no lot of people that are that have a clue and knowledge about direct provision. So for me to take part in that movie, when I had Frank Berry saying that he's shooting this kind of a movie, I really wanted to take part because I knew that this is what it will bring out. It will give people the way so that they can know what is direct provision, what is happening in direct provision, and it will give them clue of what direct provision is.
And in a few words, I know we've talked about it, what is direct provision to you, if you know what I mean?
Yes. In my few words, to be honest with you, I'll say direct provision is is a small hell.
Really?
I would say that because there is so many things going on in direct provision that a lot of people don't know about. And I would encourage people to watch Aisha so that they can see what the real direct provision is.
We will see it through the film, and we don't want to sort of discourage people from watching it, but what are the, can you pick one or two things that make it a little piece of hell?
There's facilities of people are not allowed to cook for themselves in other direct provisions. Like I said, in mine, I still have that privilege and I'm grateful for the accommodation they gave me. But there is still others that are sharing like one bedroom. It's like 6-7 people in one bedroom, 12 people in in a room and stuff like that. And they can't even cook for themselves. Sometimes they cook for them or whatsoever. So there's so many things. Some people, they don't even have facilities of getting GPs for that matter. Like, for instance, my oldest son came in Ireland in January last year. As we speak, he still doesn't have a GP and all those kind of things. And there's so many things going on. Why? Because, you know.
Yeah, and it's little things that I observe too. I noticed some people in hotel accommodation. And they were hanging, they have their food hanging out the window. And you could see it. It was out of numerous windows because there was no fridge in the room.
Which is something
we often take for, you know, we might often take for granted, but they've come to hanging their fresh food that will spoil out through the window of the hotel, which is their accommodation. So, to me, I mean, you'd be very aware of a vocal movement now here in Ireland. I still think it's a small group of people. Perhaps, I don't know, a moment of correction, but it's loud.
There are
objections to people coming into this country. And it's growing, you know what I mean? We've seen it in the past, but it's growing now. When you must see these posts on Facebook and what have you. How does that make you feel? Have you seen an increase in that kind of stuff lately? I think really particularly following the war in Ukraine. And does it affect you? Does it bother you? Do you believe it's representative of Irish society?
To be honest with you, it does, you know, especially when you live in direct provision, it does have an effect on me because, like, if only people can know what we go through, what is happening. I remember when I arrived in Ireland, I made I commented on the place where I used to stay and stuff like that, and then on the comments in the newspaper, the way people were responding to what not being appreciated.
Exactly. So I'll pretend a comment, right? You should be grateful for what you have in Ireland. If it's so bad, why don't you go home?
Exactly.
Right. So that's what people are going to say. So what would you say to them, or what did you say to them if you engaged them to me?
Well, what I will say to them is that give us a chance. Listen to us, interrogate with us and get to know us, and you will see that we are not harmful. We are just normal people and we are just here for help. That's all.
Do you have a view on the amount of refugees coming into Ireland? Do you believe we are doing enough? Do you think we've done enough? Do you think we should take more people into Ireland?
Well, to be honest with you, I've realised that now Ireland doesn't have a lot of accommodation at the moment. And I see it with a lot of people in direct provision, there is no, like, enough space. You know, I know we all need help, and somewhere, somehow, Ireland can take that much, you know.
So we should continue to accommodate people fleeing other countries to here?
Yes.
Okay. Right. So what is the pathway for you now to me to have Irish citizenship, to be, that you can call this country your home in the full sense of the word? What happens next, or how long is the process?
Well, I still have a long way to go. But all I can say is that, yes, I am getting there. And as long as I abide by the rules and regulations of Ireland, I will definitely get, you know, the status in Ireland so that I can be a resident.
Okay. So the film is being broadcast this evening.
Yes.
You're part of it. You've watched it. Tell us a little bit more about it. Obviously, it tells the direct provision story, but how is it laid out for us, to me?
Well, the film is laid out in a way that people has to learn what direct provision is, what people in direct provision go through, what is happening in direct provision. It basically tells about the deportation of people in direct provision and some smuggling, the emotions of people going in direct provision. So it's basically based on a lot of things that are actually happening in direct provision. And I would really advise people to come and see it tonight.
Yeah, and afterwards there'll be a special screening of Aisha at the ATU Letterkenny campus tonight, as I mentioned, at 5:30 p.m. And there's some special guests there as well too, isn't there? Who's going to be there?
We have Frank Berry, which is the director of the movie Aisha. And then we have Lucky Kambule from Mercy Movement of the Aslam Seeker, and which is the person that has been standing talking a lot about, you know, helping people in direct provision, standing for the people of direct provision.
Okay, and after that, those guests will be available for a discussion, a post-film discussion, where presumably some questions will be invited. And it's just so. Do you advise people? There's no point. There is a point. Sorry, there will be a lot of people that will go to this that support you, that support direct, that support the concerns about direct provision and what have you. But really, it's kind of people on the fence or maybe who don't understand, I think, that are best to consume this type of stuff. It's like anything, by the way. It could be something that I don't agree with, but I can only educate myself if I challenge my viewpoints by watching or listening to another perspective. Do you get where I'm coming from? Mm-hmm. So ideally, you would want people who maybe don't necessarily have a full understanding to see a film like this.
Yes, I would definitely like people that doesn't have a lot of understanding about this to come and see the film like this, because I think it will be actually... it will be a learning curve for them to see what is actually, what is the real direct provision all about.
Your last 2 years in Letterkenny, though, have been positive, haven't they? I mean, you've been, I think you said it to Caroline, that you know, you've felt welcomed here.
Yes, I felt very welcomed here in Letterkenny, I must say. The community everywhere, I felt very welcomed. So I just love Letterkenny.
Okay. Well, listen to me. It's been a very interesting conversation and we really appreciate you calling up to us.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
No problem. So it is a film based on women's experience in direct provision. It's going to be screened at that free event in Letterkenny this evening. Amnesty International Ireland, the Letterkenny Group and the Law Society, ATU Letterkenny, will host a special screening of Aisha at the ATU Letterkenny campus, as I say, tonight from 5:30 p.m. The director will be there, others who took part in this film, and there'll be a post-film discussion on lived experiences in direct provision. One of the people in the film is Tumi Hawonwi, and we really appreciate, once again, you calling up to see us. Caller says, very little news, if any, regarding Fianna Fáil TD Niall Collins controversy on mainstream media. Any listeners find this strange? I would say a lot of people do. I don't understand why it's not being covered. It's not something we covered, what the actions of a TD down the country. Obviously, our focus is up here in the Northwest. As to why it hasn't appeared anywhere else other than The Ditch, I really don't know the answer to that question. Greg, the racists are spreading false stories about a woman being followed on a beach in Inishowen, and we need to stop giving these racists any time whatsoever. The varying accounts of a story about a woman being followed on a beach is classic disinformation, fake news taken out of the Donald Trump book of spreading lies to suit a particular narrative. In this case, racism, feelings are not fact. Now, I would not use that word. I have had contact from people who are, whether it's justified or not, who had genuine concerns, and ignoring that doesn't achieve absolutely anything. And calling someone racist or the opposite of that or left or right, I don't see any benefit in that whatsoever. I was contacted by a couple of people, women, who weren't motivated other than that they felt a little bit fearful. And as I would do for anything that someone contacts us here, to try and get some information on that. Now, there are some people, presumably, that might take these stories, and I've seen it myself, and then state them as absolute fact. And even if they are clarified after the fact, that's never mentioned. But that being said, no one was sharing anything public with me. It was just a couple of contacts that I had privately, and I wanted to chase them up because I told the listeners that I would. And that's no disrespect to your point of view as well. I just don't really personally want to sort of engage in... I would like for us to converse about things, discuss things, and come up with maybe agree to disagree or what have you, but us splintering and them and us and they, I don't see any benefit in that or how we proceed as a society down those lines, to be completely honest with you. No, the €100 charge remains in place for ED if you do not have a GP letter to attend. Okay, thank you for that. I didn't state it one way or other because I wasn't sure and I didn't want to mislead anyone. So it's the charges for overnights and what have you. Is that it? Greg, I live in Letterkenny and work in Inishowen. We share the driving and find it difficult to find anywhere in Letterkenny to park for the day. The council bought a petrol station at the Dry Arch many years ago to build a new road through, but nothing has happened. Why can the council not turn this into a park and ride for people like us? These parking spaces are in many other towns in Ireland. What a fantastic idea. If it would work, of course. If you had an area like the bottom of Lurgy Brack where people could park their cars and hop on and off a bus that travelled in and out of Letterkenny. I wonder how many cars that use the four lanes there would that take off that stretch of road. Does anyone else think that would be a good idea? Not necessarily. We'll not get caught up in the argument of whether what that space is going to be used for or anything, but something like that, something a little bit innovative, a trial whereby you actually had a park and ride from somewhere maybe at the mountaintop and somewhere down at the Dry Arch roundabout. Regular bus services in and out, just doing loops constantly. Could that work? How many cars would it take off the road? I don't know. Okay, let us have a conversation now with Rosemary McDonough, who's the IFA Farm Business National Chair. Good morning to you, Rosemary. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning and thank you very much for having me.
No, and it's in the context of the association holding an online meeting tomorrow to update farmers on the residential loan zone land tax. Okay, talk to us a little bit about this, because this is kind of, I feel, turning out the way I thought it might, in that there are a few people probably well connected with advanced knowledge of this type of thing down in Dublin and elsewhere that have managed to get exemptions. And I'm just thinking of the poor farmer or poor smallholder up here who doesn't have those connections to do so. So talk to me a little bit about the residential zoned land tax and what will be up for discussion tomorrow.
Yes, okay. All right, so as you said there, yes, IFA are holding online tomorrow a webinar on the residential zoned land tax. And I suppose the stage it's at the moment and what the process is for people. But just, we'll go back a step for one moment to do a little bit of background. This was introduced as part of the finance bill back in 2022, and it's to come into force, we'll say, the tax of it in 2024. So previously, we had a vacant site tax, and this is to replace the vacant site tax. But the biggest problem at the moment is that in the previous one, in the vacant site levy, there was an exemption for farmed land. But at the moment, there is no exemption built into this new residential zoned land tax. So I suppose ultimately that would be the biggest challenge for IFA, that we would be campaigning that farmed land would be exempt from this residential zoned land tax. Now, another couple of changes is that this new residential zoned land tax is being administered by the Revenue Commissioners. So it is a self-assessing tax on the farmers or the landowners. It's talking about 3% of annual market value, which is self-assessed on the lands that are zoned residential and serviced. Mm. So we in IFA estimate that there could be up to 8,000 to 9,000 hectares impacted by this new tax, mostly agricultural land that farmers would not have actively seek for the land to be zoned. And I mean, this land is being used at the moment, we'll say, for food production, and there is farm families making a living, and this land would have been inherited from one generation to the next, so you can have that many generations on the farm. So it's a penal tax. Now,
just in relation to that, and we'll get into sort of the local authorities, what have you, Rosemary. I mean, obviously, this is there are maps available; people can see where this land is.
Yeah.
Does this? I hope it's by accident and not designed that farmers are being taxed out of farming. In other words, by the time this tax is applied to them, and there's no escaping it because it's through revenue, of course,
yes, exactly.
They will be compelled to give up farming on this land and make it available for residential development. surely that wasn't a design of this, was it? Or do you believe maybe it was?
Well, that's what it's beginning to look like, because the 3% of annual market value, that is penal, it will accumulate into a very substantial tax that will be more than the margin that is being made from the farm at the moment, depending on what farming type or farming sector. But just going back to what, and you talked a second about it there, the local authorities, the way the legislation was designed, the local authorities just had to publish the maps outlining, we'll say, the development plan in the area and what was in scope in those maps. So there was no onus built into the system where the local authorities had to notify landowners. So there are many, many landowners out there, or farmers out there, that may not even know at this stage that they are impacted by this tax. And we had were notified, or came to our attention, where somebody was, you know, we'll say, in the solicitor's office trying to organise to transfer a site to the next generation. And that's when, at that stage, they realised that their lands were zoned. So absolutely, going back to your point there, that it is a very penal tax, and it's on the market value, which will be very significant from a cost point of view.
And as things we'll get to the options. But what's happening here, as I mentioned just at the start, is things are starting to develop exactly how I anticipated that they might. So you have farmers who are perhaps losing out on appeals. This is land that they use for farming, for food growing and grazing and what have you. Yet we have a developer like Michael O'Flynn down in Cork, who secures an exemption from a vacant land tax for 12 Cork City sites. Now, this is land in a city that presumably is just ready to go for housing. This is going to save him approximately $2 million a year annually if all of his appeals are successful. That's where there'd be huge demand. Yet we're talking about people in Donegal, for example, with land adjacent to certain towns and what have you. It's agricultural land, and they're not having the same level of success. To me, doesn't make sense, where developers can sit on land that is perhaps for housing, and yet farmers are being compelled almost to give up their land through this tax. It doesn't sound right to me.
No, it doesn't, absolutely. And that's where we're saying that it's completely unfair. There's no transparency. There needs to be equity and in the system. And that's where the farmers wouldn't have looked for this land to be zoned. And in many of those cases, that it will take many, many years before the development would actually come as far as the farmland. So it's extremely unfair to think that a farmer would be liable to this tax for a number of years when there are so many brownfield sites around that can be used first, that there are towns and villages that have up the main street where they need to be rejuvenated and they need to be got back in use. So there are many, many other opportunities that can be looked at first before they look at land that's been actively farmed and held in farmers' families for many generations.
Yeah, but last year, I believe he's got the backing of an Oireachtas committee, which unanimously agreed that actual farmers, you know, not people that are claiming to farm, but actual genuine farmers should be exempt from this. Nothing came from that unanimous backing of that Oireachtas committee, obviously, or we wouldn't still be having this conversation. You were going to talk about the process. I presume you believe it to be unfair.
Yeah, and just going back to that Oireachtas committee, I was actually in there at the Oireachtas on the taxation, and it came up in that. So, and we have made, the ISA has made submissions. We have had many meetings with councillors, with all the ministers, with the government parties, and all the leaders. And even, you know, in the Dáil, Leo Varadkar did actually say, and I'll quote his words, "This is my farm. I own this land. It has been in my family for generations, and I don't want to develop it. I want to continue to farm it." So, I mean, we really do need the politicians to stand up.
And I think one of the points you made,
the farmers farm their land.
I think one of the points you made, and I hope I don't misquote you, but effectively you were saying, I think, that this is a blunt instrument, really, that before a tax like this is levelled on a farmer, find out, is there a demand for that land? Is it needed? you know, and all that type of stuff. That's not happening. Mm. That's a blunt instrument. And as I say, I think that was the thrust of some of the comments you made at that Oireachtas committee.
Yeah, it was, absolutely, because it feels like a land grab. It feels like CPO, the compulsory purchase order, by the back door. It actually has a huge consequence for property rights. It's like there's a higher power coming in there interfering with property rights. And it's a revenue collecting exercise, even though, you know, the revenue will say, no, it's not. But it feels like all of those, and that, exactly, that boils down to, it's a blunt instrument. Absolutely. Mm. There's plenty more land out there. There are plenty of sites and derelict sites and, you know, that weren't finished, and developments back in the time, ghost estates that need to be finished.
Council and government-owned property and so on and so forth.
Exactly.
There are many examples. And I would say many people listening to us, or at least some people listening to us, maybe aren't really, or maybe at this point they might be, may not be aware or weren't aware until recently that their land could be affected by this. Because really, to go and find the map, like I could go and find it now, but it would probably take me five or ten minutes, and then I'd have to click here, click there, zoom in there, and so on and so forth. You know, there's not, I mean, the information is there, but there doesn't seem to be any real... They almost want this to slip in. Do you know what I mean? I think there should be far more consultation with landowners.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is, we made that point as well in the Oireachtas, that this, just having to publish the maps, is not good enough, because is, as you said there, able to go in, find the maps, zone in, find whether their land is on it or not. They might not have broadband strong enough to do that. They might not have the IT or the technical ability to actually go in and find those maps. There should be, people should have been notified that. But I mean, bottom line, our ask is that the farmed land should be exempt, as it was in the vacant site level.
And I think too,
so
also,
at the moment,
yeah, Rosemary, just one other point too. By coincidence, we were talking a little earlier on to a person who works with the council as it relates to a greenway running from Buncrana to Carndonagh, the length of the Inishowen Peninsula. Well, not the length of it, but a good portion of it. And the process going through to consult with and engage with landowners, you know, there's a full year of giving landowners an opportunity to have their say, to digest it. Then there's ongoing negotiations. Then they're going to work with landowners to try and navigate their land and not split fields and all this type of stuff. So on one hand, you have got people, or one arm of the state, bending over backwards to respect people's land ownership and their rights and all that. And on another, you have a system whereby people are effectively, some might feel, they're being taxed out of farming. Zero consultation, no public consultation, no meetings. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't make sense, unless it is to, you could only conclude, whether it's true or not, that it is something of a land grab, or to compel people out of farming. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, absolutely. There seems to be no consultation here, and it's just, it's such a blunt instrument. It's coming down the road so fast. So I've been, basically, at the moment, farmers that knew about it had an opportunity to put in an appeal to the council, and that appeal had to be in by the 1st of January 2023. So the council then had until the 1st of April to review those appeals, come with a decision and send out their determination. And a lot of those were left until nearly the 1st of April. And then the next step in the process at the moment is that if a farmer is not happy with the determination that came from the council, they now have to go to Mbord Tarnóla. So, I mean, you have the whole system there where you, the cost of it, the whole, well, there is no cost to make the appeal, but the whole background, you might have to, you know, get a planner or an engineer or somebody to help you make this application to Mbord Tarnóla. So that is the next step. And that has to be in by the 1st of May. So the 1st of May is only around the corner. We feel that this is an extremely tight window because of the Easter break as well in that time frame. So that's the process at the moment. And I mean, we would strongly advise anybody that is, you know, in scope for this, that they do need to further their appeal and send it to Mbord Tarnóla.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because, well, they have to be in the process.
Understood.
They have to, you know,
Well, listen, there's going to be much more information and a more, because I'm having to skip through it because we're short on time, Rosemary. But tomorrow there is this webinar that people can hook up into. It's at 11 a.m. How do people register or log into it, please?
If they go, okay, sorry. So if people who may have some interest in this or just want for their own information and have the time, please go to the ISA website. And on the ISA website, they will be able to register for the webinar, and they will then get a link when they register. So the webinar is at 11 a.m. tomorrow morning online.
And
so
I think
register for it on the ISA website.
Okay, and as I say, not just farmers, county councillors, local reps, community groups.
Yeah.
Okay, Rosemary, thanks for your time this morning. Take care of yourself.
Thank you very much.
Bye bye.